Blog Talk Radio.
Found Masonic Effects. Welcome, everyone. This is a place, hopefully, to give you an opportunity to add imagination to the flow of ideas and perceptions surrounding ancient free and accepted speculative Freemasonry. I harbor no politics here except my own. It's been an interesting time listening to the world unravel, as it usually does. This time, we don't necessarily have the same sense of resolution about what the future may bring. We are our best and finest minds are telling us that the theoretical probabilities that were understood by philosophers thousands of years ago and more recently through science is actually coming true. The thought that we were above and superior to all that was and could be was proven, whether it was proven hypocritical or just wrong-minded, is with us today. So we now can focus on making the very best of the opportunities left to us and adjusting our thinking and eventually having nature impose itself on us in a way that's undeniable, as if it ever was. You know, we create these illusions, these falsehoods, and then add some politics to make it to go down a little bit easier. I've been here in this part of North America. I've been noticing something, that a phenomenon that I think is maybe happening in your areas. Although, my goodness, I'm talking to an audience that extends around the globe. I'm talking about here, brethren and guests, about this, what I'm thinking is calling the Starbucks generation. When I was a boy, we didn't have drive-thrus, and especially for something like a cup of coffee, you made that at home. After you were a certain age, you made that at home. And as far as people walking around with a cup, that just didn't happen. You'd have a thermos if you went to work. Or there would be something made if you were in an office where there was staff. Factories, you brought your thermos with your lunch, didn't you? And most people would have a cigarette break. And coffee and a cigarette was considered by the likes of me one of the most perfect breakfasts that could be. Until the belligerence of tobacco industry was exposed, not necessarily exposed, but understood and appreciated by a wider audience. This stuff was killing us. And we figured that out. And now we know that it's almost an atrocity to be offloading tobacco to developing nations where literacy is not as developed as it is in some other places. It's as if we can send our predatory capitalists to those areas to exploit people's ignorance, can't we? All this about a cigarette. The difference today is that when I notice a particular type of person going into Starbucks, and you when you go in there, it's a bit confusing to start with because you're able to, for the first time for many, and it was for me many years ago, able to tailor the type of coffee that you're ordering or tea or whatever to your exact tastes. It means you can try. There's a trial and error, new taste. You can actually tune it in. Do you want extra froth? Do you want latte? Do you want espresso? Do you want Americano? Do you want simply a black cup of coffee? You can still get that. And do you want it with some type of sweetener? Well, take your choice. Do you want it for a vegan diet? That's possible. The point is not whether you walk into a mom and pop shop where you're getting a relatively traditional cup of drip coffee. It's that we now have people that are tailoring to their own tastes. You walk down the street and you'll see this. Walk down the street, you'll see people with headphones on, not just kids. But they're able to, if they want to listen to that symphony walking down the street, they can, or sit in the park, or on the subway. They want to listen to their music in an outrageously. They can do that without troubling or disturbing or bringing any attention to themselves. Oh, it hasn't stopped the bravado of young boys and young youth that want to bring attention to themselves, want to be make their statement. It's, I mean, after at this age, I find that tedious. Like, go ahead, you know, this is the new outrageous, the new version of outrageous, but it's been done before. Whether it's your hair or your beard or your style of clothing or the lack of clothing, outrageous, and then demand that you have a right, that this is some form of freedom. I guess at some point, what I'm talking about is this notion of self. It's changed, and I think an argument could be made that the people around us today are more confident than we were in the day. And no, not braver or less brave. Nothing like that. Nothing so silly. Remember, we were of a time when we used to put people that were traumatized by the battle of war in front of a firing squad and literally murder them, execute them. We in balance, we want to talk about the world as if it's there's a right and wrong. There's a world to be understood. Whether we can tolerate, we're looking at tolerances, and look what's happened, nurse. Our science has, science in general has given us new perspectives that we look on. So these notions, I haven't said this for a long time on the program, notions that we're somehow able to resist changes, the meanderings of foolish old men, you know, the ones that make you shake your head and shrug your shoulders and walk past. Yeah, we've been doing that a little too long where I am. It's foolish. It's not representative, and it's not accurate anyway. It's just foolish sentimentalism, if anything. And then, yuck, yuck, nudge, nudge, wink, wink, we all go along with it, don't we? Well, Masonic effects, I have no patience and for misogyny or homophobia or any of the types of male chauvinism. I don't have any room for that because I've actually, like many of you, I have this belief in this sense of equality and unity and a fraternity, and it's not going to happen unless I change. No, I'm not in charge. It's that at this molecular level, I can do something. I can do something and represent. And I'm ask you to consider the effect of you doing the same at whatever scale. It's an individual thing. The new folks coming along are more nuanced. They're more, they have that sense, thank goodness, of confidence that their taste in music isn't what is necessarily being broadcast. There is a general trend, of course, but the trend is different. The more we understand and appreciate these trending, I think it's the evolution of culture and the effect of that on individuals. It doesn't stop. It's not like we can take a picture and say, aha. Often the old boys in our lodges will do that. They'll be talking as if, huh, I've taken a picture and that's what we are. Well, it's more like a fast-forward movie than a picture. And 3D, probably closer to 8D, that we're looking in any account at people that have that inner expression. I know I'm not talking about people, boys, childishly embarrassing themselves by mocking that. The people will mock everything. They mock me. They mock you. But eventually, at some point, we need to be able to consider that we are representative of something with a bit of intelligence to it. The thoughtfulness. This is what so many what we are, our brand. It's not something that you and I create at a Grand Lodge or a lodge level. It's there. And it's like walking into the first time I walked into, I was working in Detroit, and I went to a ball game. The first time I went into the old stadium, there was just statues and Ty Cobbs there, and the way things are done, it was just wonderful. It was old school, impactful. We're the same. You don't go in there and start to berate a baseball game. No. I suppose you could if you wanted to, but really, I could say the outfield bleachers where students like me and my friends would sit would take umbrage with you if you had started to do that. And Detroit fans, well, it would not be a pretty, pretty sight. You know, if you're a football fan in Europe listening to this or anywhere in the world, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, ours softer. We're wearing gloves. You don't go to the opera and mock the music. You don't go to the art gallery and mock art. You don't go to a Masonic lodge and mock intelligence meaning. This is the struggle. I don't see anybody else doing it. This is the struggle saying, ignorance, the darkness, is our target. We're going to eliminate that wherever we can. Yuck, yuck, wink, wink. Well, I'm not as educated as those boys over there, so I don't have to take it so seriously. Well, that type of hypocrisy has no place. And we're going to talk about a bit of that today. If that were the case, we wouldn't have ever gotten off the ground, boys and girls. The roots, there is a root, the transformation from a working man's guild to a society constitutionally governed by a gentleman. There was a transition. If not for those people that built the, created the foundation, that structure that we needed, well, intelligent, enlightened minds recognized the value and importance. This wasn't competition. This was intelligence. It was intelligent minds that worked those problems out in guilds. So anybody coming along and say, well, if you're not, if you're the color of your collar is different than mine, then there must be something wrong with you, because there sure is nothing wrong with me. Well, it's a time to, I don't know whether we call it growing up or being a bit more mature, or just opening the eyes a little bit. We're all in this together. We picked up some really, really good ideas over the years. It's not a competition. In fact, listen to your ritual. This is about fraternity. So if you don't subscribe to that, don't be a hypocrite around me and refer to me as a brother. Be that. If that's what you are, then show it. The bickering and all that stuff, that's child stuff. It's not for grown. It's not for grown-ups, and it's certainly not an aspect of enlightenment, but this is what the Starbucks generation is seeing when they walk in the doors. And that's just what they share with each other. What's it like? You know, when you, these young guys or young people are going home, they're going to be talking to somebody. Did you ever think? How many, let's guess, how many contacts do they have that they talk about? Masonry, their experience. Well, they're more confident than you and I, and this whole notion of secrecy and privacy, well, we've just let that one run through our fingers like sand. And we appear quite foolish in a lot of ways, balling up our little fists and getting red-faced about it. Look to the truth of the matter. Truth is not your opinion or my opinion. Now, how do we find that? Well, my goodness, how many? Everybody will turn the program off if I start beating that drum again. You know, you already know this. Good program today. I lifted a few, you know, the commentary today, or the sketch, as a very dear man pointed out, Bonfires of the Vanities. Yeah. This is, we're going to take a walk back into the 15th century with the Medicis in Florence. Just short little visit. A good program today. I think you'll like it. The history fits in hand in glove. What are these new, this next generation and the one coming behind are telling us is that it could be bouncing along on a tractor, listening to good tunes in an air-conditioned comfort, or walking behind your team of horses. And yeah, I did that once, yeah, a long time ago. You can. You have the choice. One better than the other? I guess if you're materialistic. Did I say that out loud? Unless you, if that's the way you define yourself and the world, sadly, ethics may change your and fill in some of the gaps in your thinking. It's a good program today, and we're going to kick it off with some decent music. This is Kenny Dorham and sitting in with Cannonball Adderley from 1959. Sit back. I have to go and fill up with another latte, and I'll be right back to join you. Thank you. Remember 1959? Big, huge cars. Big, huge wheels. A lot to remember. Bonfires of the Vanities. Sometimes these themes come around again. Don't just say you have read books. Show that through them you have learned to think better, to be a more discriminating and reflective person. Books are the training weights of the mind. They are very helpful, but it would be a bad mistake to suppose that one has made progress simply by having internalized their contents. Much as I'd like to take credit for that, that was from Epictetus, a Stoic philosopher. Bonfires of the Vanities. Historians called it that. In the 15th century, the Medici had already demonstrated a liberality that at the time was unnerving for Christian extremists. But taken to accounts by an outspoken Dominican monk. This is a story of brief notoriety that played on public sentiment. The growth of Florence was unprecedented. It was a hub for trade from the east and west. Tight rules of conduct and dissension were relaxed under the administration of a powerful family that controlled church and state. It was fertile ground for the odd and unavoidable zealot. Girolamo Savonarola was one who knew how to inflame his congregants. So he aimed his energies at ridding Florence sin by destroying symbols. So his followers, dressed in white gowns and garlands, went door to door collecting sinful objects, artwork, books, cosmetics, dresses. And on the 7th of February, 1497, they burned them all. Oh, he was held to accounts, and eventually, something like 2 years later, he was executed. He was just way out there. So What connects this with masonry? The so what factor. If we had a Masonic bonfire for all symbols of vanity, what would be left? Will we still have purpose? Today, symbols distributed have been distributed in high volume for very little brotherly input. Compared to the principles encapsulating in early masonry, we have a contemporary fascination with them, as long as we are not required to adjust behavior or thinking. I suggest we are similar, them and us, aligning ourselves intellectually with value-based concepts. One additional burden is maintaining messaging that deteriorates when the crowd is so large that intimacy is lost. The aggression between men is about the same. Whether we can have intelligent conversation without distracted by division has tracked us through history. Accountability and connection has expanded, so we expect a further cleansing. Our order exists around the world. Today we have choices to make. Will we find the best practices for a lodge and adapt without waiting for an entire generation to fade? Can we do this in real time? A nice mnemonic here. Personalize your experience with masonry. Oh yes, I know this is heretical. The notion of uniformity is very prevalent here, and I just shake my head. Who decides what sycophants would call this. Cliches. Who decides that? I look back at our early roots and there is no uniformity. Uniformity at all is at such a high level of abstraction, it's there. I think what we're talking about is the people that have read the books but really not applied them or understood the content in real time. This is the way it is. It's about your mind, your brain, the way you're functioning, the way you're going about your business, and whether the ideas have been met with reception by you. So select a symbol that appeals to you. Oh, the hell with the rest. What symbol of all of them? It might be a starting point, but select a symbol that represents you. And understand it. If you're needing encouragement, understand it to its fullest. And remember, you may need to revisit that a number of times before the fullness of understanding comes to you. What you learned a year ago may not be the totality. And so just be receptive to the fact that when you come across new information, you can just add it. Instead of walking around with your fists clenched as if you're talking in absolutes, well, good luck with that. I say that sarcastically. Apply that symbol. Find one that it speaks to you, that plays with your imagination, and then think about not what you have to do, or unless your notion is that you're so darn inadequate that anything healthy or broad-minded has to be forced at you. Well, if that's your attitude, you'll probably be on the outside of the window with your little nose pressed up against it for entire days. Instead, Just move around to the edge of the window and look behind. There you are. Breathe it. Breathe it in. That symbol, that note, that quality that excites you may not be the same one that excites the person next to you. So, the exchange of ideas. What excites him about? And that conversation helps to illustrate and enlighten you about your own opinions. Is your opinion so weak you need to be dominant in the room? Really? Well, here's a little secret. It's just a way that men our age make ourselves look silly. No. These are the tasks that we go through. This is the way you learn. We learn by trial and error, or we learn by the work and wisdom of other people if we have that capability. Well, we all do, I think. Here, listen to a little John Coltrane and fill in the blanks. Thank you. know, if you have the idea in mind that music is transformative and you begin to listen to it that way, it's a question, like, what effect does different types of music have, and how much about yourself do you really want to know? Do you want to know the expression of sorrow? Well, for generations, people have been doing that, or you do that through literature and through the arts. Here today, music is one of those forms, and we know that committing whole stories and legends and history to song was a way for people to share these ideas well before they were able to get near a classroom and be taught. They weren't taught to write, so you get a bunch of people that don't know how to write. They don't. Their language skills are affected by that. Oh, the smugness of today didn't exist in that day. You went about your business and you lived as well as you could. And then there were certain inclinations that came about because we were able to learn and share vocabulary and languages. And then we began to realize that it did something to our thinking. I cried and wailed for naught availed. He put a forward face on and did avow that he was now a free accepted Mason. That's from a Mason song, an excerpt from a work by Brother Robbie Burns. Here. Poetry, eh? In a modern mindset, it may not feel relevant. These are the words of Christine Wilson Slack from Masonic Poetry. You'll find this in the Masonic Philosophical Society. I'm sampling here, of course. We have literature-wise moved from very constructed and structured forms of poetry to the latter 20th and early 21st century use of exploded syntax and compound words and disjointed phrasing. Modern poetry uses the impact of singular language to convey emotions based on the listener's personal experience. Now, while this is true of all poetry, the poetry of the 18th and 19th and early 20th century were far more lyrical and visual, wrapping the listener into not only the emotional impact of words, but drawing them into a mindset where those emotions were relevant. Will thou let it slip useless away, you know? We're not taught these things. Many of us weren't taught these things. I'm sharing with you the work today of a poem Rudyard Kipling wrote. Interesting fellow, not somebody that I normally turn to when I'm thinking about poets, but significant. A fellow born in 1865 in India, of all places, in Bombay. That's what we call Mumbai today. And he received, 1907, he received the Nobel Prize for literature. So he's making a difference. This is a fellow that is remembered for his celebration of British imperialism. Our attitudes have changed somewhat about that. But for a boy of an artist and a scholar, John Lockwood Kipling, did all right. Dad, his father influenced him. He did quite well for himself. Now, this poem I'm going to share today is A Pilgrim's Way. This is a link to Kipling's account of his journey up the Nile in 1913 and part of a visit to Egypt, which he had found enlivening after the tiresome traumas of British politics in that year. Pre-war, eh? And an uncomfortable journey from Marseille by a P&O steamer. Egypt reminded him of the sounds and smells of Muslim cities in India, and in the Valley of the Kings it caused him to reflect on its strange echoes of ancient past, part of the marvelous variety of human life, as he rejoiced in calling it over the years as he wandered around. In middle life, in the cheerfully serious verses of A Pilgrim's Way, Kipling insisted that heaven and hell, which in our hearts we have, show nothing irredeemable on either side the grave. Ho! It's a play on words, Pilgrim's Way, expressing two meanings, a way or method of performing some action, and a pilgrim's way or road leading to a shrine like those of Thomas Becket in Canterbury, immortalized by Chaucer in Canterbury Tales or Santiago de Compostela in northern Spain. Huh. Just a little bit of this. I do not look for holy saints to guide me on my way, or male and female devilkins to lead my feet astray. If these are added, I rejoice. If not, I shall not mind, so long as I have leave and choice to meet my fellow kind. For as we come and as we go, and deadly soon we go, the people, Lord, the people are good enough for me. Thus I will honor pious men whose virtue shines so bright, though none are more amazed than I when I by chance do right. And I will pity foolish men, for woe their sins have bred, though 99% of mine I brought on my own head. An Amorite or Immorite or general average, the people, Lord, thy people are good enough for me. And when they bore me overmuch, I will not shake mine ears, and recalling many thousands such whom I have bored to tears, and when they labored to impress, I will not doubt nor scoff, since I myself have done no less, and sometimes pulled it off. Yeah, as we are and we are not, and we pretend to be, the people, Lord, thy people are good enough for me. And when they work me random wrong, at oft times hath been, I will not cherish hate too long, my hands are none too clean. And when they do me random good, I will not feign surprise, nor more than those whom I have cheered from wayside charities. But as we give and as we take, where our takings be, the people, Lord, thy people, are good enough for me. In the introduction today, I talked about our roots, the development. We were intelligent enough to understand the value of the structure of guilds, and I'd like to think. It's fanciful, I know, but I'd like to think that during that period of transition from operative to speculative, that it was the best. It wasn't the struggle, it wasn't the manual labor, it was the best minds of the guilds. You didn't keep these guilds running and functioning. They maintain the accountabilities by having uneducated, inexperienced fools at the helm. Education came by different means, but these are people that knew what they were talking about. Jacob talks about that. We're talking about the Constitution and civil society here, and I found this absolutely fascinating. There's a surviving manuscript records from the Lodge of Dundee in Scotland that let us watch almost year by year the transformation from a working man's guild to a society constitutionally governed by gentlemen. These records are rare for their completeness, although other Scottish lodges leave similar archives documenting this transformation. The very richness of these records has led the historian who has worked most extensively with them, David Stevenson, to to argue that the Freemasonry bequeathed to the 18th century was a Scottish invention. By this, he means that the transformation from a guild of stonemasons to a society dominated by gentlemen is not completely devoid of handworkers. It occurred first in Scotland, gradually spreading to England. The Freemasonry of merchants and gentlemen, which was finally organized under the Grand Lodge of London in 1717, was therefore not English at its origin, despite the fact that most Masonic historians, being English themselves, have insisted that it was. Stevenson further argues that the mysteries and secrets associated with Freemasonry, and in particular its mystical language about God as the great architect, about Solomon's temple as a Masonic construction, and about the search for wisdom and enlightenment, owe much to the influence of intellectual traditions that predate the European Enlightenment by a century or more. Stevenson claims that the Masonic devotion to the mystical and to the search of perfection grew out of intellectual traditions established in the early 17th century by Scottish Masons. By Scottish Masons guilds and into societies of gentlemen. In addition, Moray was a figure of some intellectual importance in the early Royal Society of London. Its interest in the practice and history of the trades as part of applied science led Moray to attempt a history of masonry for the society. And by the 1720s, fellows of the Royal Society were noticeably present at the earliest London lodges. The Masonic myths fascinated Moray for much of his life, as did the more mystical and scientific writers of the late Renaissance. This fascination with ancient and secret wisdom, so commonplace among educated gentlemen in the period, could nurture an attraction to any originally medieval institution that claimed access to it. Few non-Masonic admissions to lodges in the 17th century are as well documented as that of Moray. Most lodges give us only the names of these non-operatives, as they were known, and little else about them. At best, as with the records left by the lodge in Dundee, we can observe a pattern both in the circumstances of these admissions and in the effect the new build brothers gradually had on the lodges. But slowly and fitfully, the craft or guild evolved into a society which retained something of the old while adding the interests and values of the higher classes of men who had now been recruited and who would eventually come to dominate. Next time we get together, we'll talk about the Dundee Lodge and the work going on there by the 1690s. Not to upset anybody who has bought into the orthodoxy of a history that may not be accurate. Scotland? Does it make sense? Well, the extant records are really hard to ignore. Thank you. Times when listening to this music with you is just amazing. It's a remarkable sounding round. Well, thank you for tuning in today. I'm sorry that we have to part, but too much of this would be like just too much. I look forward to having you sit in next week, and I hope that it's been somewhat stimulating. See if you can, you know, apply to your own tastes this notion of finding the sift through. There's a number, and to do the task, I'm not being coy here. You need to do a bit of reading, and as Epictetus urged us, to understand. Don't just walk around claiming that you're brilliant in every way. We already know that you are. But apply what you've learned. Now, to listeners everywhere out there, we have new listeners tuning in from Chile. From South America now, we have Peru and Chile joining us. And to the rest, wherever you are, all of the continents are represented, and I appreciate that tremendously. But it's more of, I think, a credit to the a reflection of the import of this Masonic philosophy that we attempt to understand. And sometimes, not by any deliberate fault of my own, I discover things. I'll actually learn things. Who knew? I hope you'll take care of one another and those around you, especially during these turbulent times. Commit those acts of random Masonic kindness. See you later, brethren. Little Lenny Tristano. Bye. Thank you.